Garrett Edelstein here, your celeb expert and your celeb savant. Celeb Savant is a weekly entertainment show. We have long-form career retrospective type interviews with celebrities, singers, actors, and industry experts. On this episode of Celeb Savant, I'll be speaking to Robbie Rivera. Robbie is a house music producer and DJ born in Puerto Rico. He has an extensive catalogue of original productions and remixes to his credit, ranging from tribal to progressive house, as well as incorporating garage and Latin elements. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Robbie Rivera. Robbie, where do we find you in the world? How are you doing and what's happening in your life?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing great. I am in Georgia. I'm about 45 minutes north of Atlanta. It's called Marietta, Georgia. And it's like in the suburbs. And it's a lot of woods, a lot of trees, a lot of wildlife. It's kind of very relaxing. And yeah, I'm just here in my home right now, in my studio. I have a few music productions that I'm working on and remixes. So I'm just, doing what I do every single day, which is make music and do other stuff, run my label and try to get shows. That's my life.
Okay, so let's take it all the way back to the beginning of the Robbie Rivera journey and story in the music business. So I know you've been in the industry a number of years. So the hybrid version of the Robbie Rivera story, what got you into music? How did that happen? And yeah, handing it over to you.
Well, I started at a very young age. I grew up in San Juan, Puerto Rico, in the Caribbean. And at a very young age, I saw a DJ. I think I was in sixth grade, which that makes me about 13, I think. And I saw a DJ at my sister's senior prom mixing vinyl together and playing this really cool dance music. And he was mixing it live. And I was sitting right next to him with my parents. And I saw mixing music together flawlessly with no break in the middle. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I used to listen to the music on the radio a lot. And the radio, they always be a break between songs. And I was like, why is this guy playing music and there's no break in the middle, and he's just mixing it perfectly and everybody's enjoying it? And I'm like, I was just intrigued. And I told my mom I wanted to start, buying music and buying vinyl records. And she would take me almost every Friday. She would go out to the shopping mall, to get things, whatever. And then she would drop me off on the music store, and they had like a section for DJs just for vinyl. And in Puerto Rico in those days, this is 1988, all the dance music would come from Europe, mostly. So you would get all that European flavor from Spain, from Italy, the UK, and then you would get some of the other dance music from New York, which is more freestyle dance in those days, early CNC Music Factory, for example. Mm-hmm. And one day I was a boombox with a cassette and a recorder, and I was listening to a song on the radio, and I was recording it on the tape, and I decided to just pause it at a certain section of the song while I was listening to it live. And then I just waited until they played it again on the radio, and then I removed the pause button on a certain section of the song. Mm-hmm. So basically I was editing. I was trying to create my own mix. It's all called Rock Me Amadeus, from back in the day. Yep. That was a song I was trying to repeat some of the sections of the vocal. And I was really young. I was like, I was 7th grade or whatever. And I was like, well, this is really cool. I can make my own edits. I can make my own version because it just sounded cool to me. So I told my mom, can you take me to the music instrument shop, so I can speak to somebody there and tell them the following. So my mom took me, and I told the guy that works there, okay, listen, I want to extract the vocals for the songs on the radio, and I want to add my own music to it. I only had a drum machine that a friend lent me and a reel-to-reel recorder to make editing music. So the guy looks at me in the shop, and he tells me, well, you can't do that, You have to get the master recording tape from the original band and go to a recording studio and do all these things. That I was like, what? Oh, man, that sounds like a lot of work. All right, so, okay, so thank you. And the guy was like laughing, And then when I went home, I just continued learning how to create beats and rhythm on different drum machines that a friend of mine, a neighbor, a good friend of mine, Jorge, that he had all these instruments. I did play live drums, so I had a set of a drum kit in my house, plus my turntables and all that stuff. So yeah, so I was like really trying to figure out how to make my own versions, and when it came to DJing, nobody taught me how to mix music. I wanted to get the latest models of the Technics MK12, because those were the best ones, are the ones that everybody used to mix music, and this mixer that everybody used, Newmark. And I couldn't afford it. And my parents were like, "Yeah, we're not gonna get you that." So my parents got me the cheapest version of a TJ setup, which one of them didn't even have pitch control. So then eventually they got me a better turntable, two turntables, and I was mixing two songs, just playing with them, and suddenly they were both on the same beat, and it was a record, a track from Erasure and a track from New Order. And they were all perfectly synced together. I'm like, whoa, that's how they do it. So you have to put the kick drum with this kick drum at the same time and keep it there without even moving around, and use the pitch to keep it there perfect. And that's the art of mixing. So I learned that by myself, and I was like, whoa, this is great. And then from there on, through middle school until I graduated, all I did was a DJ in the weekend, and whatever parties I would get booked at, house parties, school parties, weddings, whatever it was. And I continued buying records, and one thing I used to do a lot was read the credits from records and start to learn who are all the producers and the people editing the music and the labels. And I was really intrigued with all that. I was like, this is so cool. So when I graduated from high school at 17, or I think it was 18, I told my dad I wanted to study music production and studio recording, and I was blessed that my father was able to pay for my school. And he told me, okay, go, I'll send you to production school, and then you have to get a regular degree at a regular university and get something serious, because, and that's just a hobby in case it doesn't really work out. And then I went through the whole drama of trying to get into a school, because in those days, you had to learn how to play an instrument. You had to play an instrument to get into music production school. Well, there wasn't really that much music production school, but you had to go through a music school, and there you would take business courses and studio recording. But you had to learn how to have learn how to play music and read music. I didn't know anything about that. I still don't. But I consider myself a melody maker, and you'll put a keyboard in front of me, and I will start playing melodies just naturally, even chords sometimes. Now I play much better, but so eventually I went to the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I got a music production degree, and that's where the Pro Tools software was starting out, and different softwares for music recording, and I learned how to program music and how to record it in the studio. And then I did what my father told me. I went to business school and I got a degree on that. And then one day I wanted to release my first record, still in college, and I tried shopping it to music labels, and nobody liked them. Nobody liked my music. I went to a lot. I even drove with a friend of mine in New York City. I went to different record labels in New York. Everybody hated my music. It was just terrible. It was just terrible. And I was like, whoa, I must be doing something wrong. My music always had a lot of energy, and house music in the beginning, just more about the groove and cool beats, percussion. Mine was like that, but it was just a lot of energy in it. So eventually, I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to release it myself. So then borrowed money from my credit card and made some, 100 or something vinyl, and flew back to Puerto Rico in college break and gave it to all the DJs around the island. And then eventually a distributor in New York called me up and said, we want to order 1,000 copies of this track. So then I had to manufacture those, and that's how I started the label.
Robbie, you've done a lot of remixing for other artists at the same time producing your own tracks. The difference of that. So, producing your own tracks obviously is in your own space, your own time, your own energy. Do you prefer one compared to the other, or is it equally enjoyable producing your own tracks or remixing a track that an artist has already released?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I do love remixing other music from other artists, and it's a fun thing to do, because I'll get, when a cappella from an artist, say, here, put your music vibe to it, you know, and then I could get super creative. I could make it very melodic. I can make it very banging. I can make it very soulful, whatever the vibe of the song is. And it's a lot of fun to do that. And I've had a lot of success throughout my career remixing. I've remixed a lot of artists and have great stories about that. And then, but when it comes to original music, it's also fun because, you know, I'm just there sitting in front of my computer, you know, okay, let me just start with the drums and the one note bass line. Let me see where it goes from there, you know. And I just start playing with different instruments and I could do whatever I want. When it comes to remixing, you have to like be focused on, okay, the record company is paying me to have a particular dance sound, something that's gonna most likely get played on dance radio, and definitely want DJs to play it around the clubs around the world. So I have to really focus on making sure I get those people happy. When it comes to original music, you know, I can take the risk of just creating and being super original and creating new sounds, and hopefully people will like it. Sometimes they don't, sometimes they do.
When it comes to remixing for other artists, is it the artists themselves that are involved or the record label? And how much input do either or both of them have in the final remix?
You know, most of the, I would say 95% of the time is the record label and the
Okay.
manager of the artist. Example, when I remixed Carlos Santana, the label hit me up and they said, look, we have this obviously an amazing guitar riff from Carlos Santana, and we had this hip hopish vocal from Wyclef Jean, and they were like, we just want to make it into house music. You know, right now it's, you know, it's like a pop tune with 100 BPM. We got to get this up to 128. We got to get this, you know, sounding awesome. And we heard you could do it, so I'll be like, okay, fine. Look, send me the vocals, send me everything you got. We'll negotiate a deal, and I'll just do it. And rarely, rarely does the artist ever come back and say anything. I think it's just like the label. You know, when you're an artist at that level, you did your version, your pop mix. You know, and the management, the label really handle how we're gonna make money for the on this song. So we gotta hire remixers and all these things. So yeah, some of them don't really say anything. Maybe now, since there's a lot of social media, you can tag artists and stuff like that. Maybe you'll get a reply. But in all the remixes that I've done, I did get a man. It was Madonna and the manager, and they did call me up from a car saying they loved the remix. Who else? I think Ricky Martin once sent via management. The management always said they liked the mix or they hated it or changed it up. There's been a few, you know, moments where the labels don't like the remix at all, and you have to do it again and redo it again, and sometimes it just doesn't work, or you get into a battle with the singer. I had a situation with Christina Aguilera. She didn't like the way her vocals sound at all. And you get, you know, when you're taking a ballad, for example, and you gotta get the ballad and speed it up to house music, you know, it's gonna affect the vocals. And we're talking about, you know, the year 2003, you know, so there was the technology. Now it's way better. So I remember we had a situation with her vocals, and we had to remove her vocals.
And
So I like both.
are there any artists that you have yet to remix that you are still on your bucket list?
Yeah, of course. Well, it used to be U2, and I got to remix U2. But unfortunately, the remix I did, they did not release it. And this has happened a lot in the remix world, and it's very annoying. So they'll hire you to remix the song, they'll pay you, and then they'll say it was just for promotional use. It was just to send it to the DJs. You know, we're not gonna put it up on Apple or Spotify or iTunes, whatever. I'm
Okay.
like, why not? What, it's already done. So with YouTube, it was like that, and then they allowed me to put it on YouTube, but you know, I was pretty pissed off because I really worked hard on that remix. Some bands that I liked, I've always liked the British vocals, like Coldplay. I like Coldplay, those type of sounding vocals. But you know, like I love the Killers. That would be great. You know, that's the answer. Yeah, I would love to remix the Killers.
Of your music creativity, how much percentage of it is re remixing and how much percentage of it is your own production or creativity? And then beyond that, what keeps inspiring you to create and motivate you to keep putting out beats and music?
Most of it is at the moment, like if I would think of this whole year, most of it is original work, this lately, and some remixes, not a lot of major label stuff. The last remix for a major label was right before COVID. And they did Maluma and Madonna did their track together. That one got released. But after that, there's been a lot of original stuff, and which I like doing that. I'm trying to, doing original music, you're always trying to re reinvent yourself, always trying to create. Obviously, when I started or when my career was taking off, there weren't that many people doing it. Music production, dance music, it was only a few people doing it. I mean, a few people, maybe 50 or 100 people, Now it's remixing and production. It's pretty simple to do if you have a good laptop, and I don't want to say the word simple, but it's easier than being in a large recording studio with a huge board and all that stuff and outboard gear and all that stuff. So it's easier to do that. But I've always thought, like, when I start producing music, I've always imagined the crowd in front of me when I'm DJing, if they're gonna like it. I tend to like focus a lot on the people dancing while I'm performing. So I'll be like staring out there and seeing how they're reacting to this certain sound, to that certain sound. And as people stop dancing and go to the bar, I'm like, okay, this is not good. This it didn't keep them there. So I remember all those moments when I started making music, and I really don't want anybody to leave the dance floor. So that's why my music tends to have a lot of energy, and if I start producing music that's very, let's see, more deep or a bit, let's say they use the word boring. It's a bit boring, and even though it might not be boring from somebody else. So yeah, when I get inspired by the people in the dance floor and stuff like that. And other, well, actually, I know other artists as well. I listen to a lot of other music.
Okay. Now you mentioned when you started out, the technology has advanced over time. Like you mentioned, having a good laptop, it has made things simpler. And not putting any other artists down in any what way, but do you find that the fact that you've had the experience of having to do it, as you mentioned, in the studio and the board, and growing over time with the advancements of technology and what's come about, it's allowed you a deeper understanding of the way the music works and is put together?
Yeah, for sure. Like when I officially started my music production, my career, I did not ha I mean, I did learn. I was trained to work in a big studio. I was always a bit scared to go work in those huge boards. I will let other people work with that. So when it came to, for me, this music, I wanted to use as less equipment as possible, because it was like intimidating for me to have a lot of gear. A lot of producers are the other way. They have to have everything, to make their music. So I remember when I started, I only had one keyboard, and it was like a digital audio workstation. So on that keyboard, you could sequence and arrange a whole song, a whole remix, and then have a little mixing board and two speakers, and that was about it. That was my setup. And but still, when you were going to find a kick drum or a snare or a bass sound or a piano sound, that's where you had to really get creative to make those sounds not sound so electronic. If you listen to like early electronic music from Depeche Mode or Erasure Water, sometimes you hear those beats sound very, very, very electronic, which I like. But and it's kind of cool now because it's kind of like coming back. But fast forward to now, a DJ, music producer, can actually go online to certain companies that provide all these sounds already made for you, and sounds awesome. You can go and pay $10 a month, and they have access to a library of kick drums, of snares, of great bass sounds. You even have access to melodies already created by other people, and you select by key, and you just download it, and then you can manipulate it. It's a whole new way of creating music. I think it's pretty genius, the people that we knew it, because it's like, so now I have to reinvent myself and use those type of sounds that I already manipulated and created and make it sound cool with my stuff. So I do like it, and sometimes I don't like it. I'm releasing a track called Majestic, and I did not use anything. I went back old school, and I used sounds that were created from the software come fresh keyboard, a fresh kick, or fresh bass. I manipulated myself and it sounds so awesome. I was like, wow, it sounds so clean and loud. It sounds beautiful. And so I have my whole battle with like, should I use that? Should I use that? So, but you know, I do get a lot of demos from producers that use all the stuff that's already created for you. And some of them are really good, but you know, what happens is like a lot of stuff starts sounding the same. That's what happens.
Do you think those people who've only been used to using or creating music through that library of already available sounds and melodies, would they be able to create outside of that, do you feel? Or do you think they're stuck in that comfort zone?
That's a great question. Don't know the right answer, but I think that they'll, I think some of them don't know how to create music by themselves. They learned only by using other people's created music and put it all together on a brand new sound. There's an art there because if you have 20,000 sounds to choose from, and you choose from here, 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 and you put everything together, and you have a production, a song, you can even choose vocals, which is bizarre. I mean, some of them are not that good, but I mean, it's just for you to get ideas. So who knows? I mean, I don't know. I get a lot of demos, and I'm like, oh, okay, I've heard that before. I've heard that before. Hope that I've heard that before. I'm not gonna use it. And if you really want to get technical on this, so in dance music, so many people use these sounds that when you, as a label owner, where when you're distributing the music and you put them up on the platforms, for example, YouTube, you need to monetize your song, you know, make some money out of it. But then that percussion loop or that bass sound was used by 20 other artists. YouTube uses that content ID thing and it recognizes, oh, you stole this bass line from this guy. I'm like, no, that guy stole it from that guy. And that guy stole it from the actual company. The company where you bought it. So it could it, so now for example I did a track and that I did a deal with Spinning Records, which is Warner, and I did it with a friend of mine, and he had used a few loops from what you know that was from the company that created them, and we had to tell Warner these are the exact loops and the exact identification, so when they put it up on YouTube or whatever, it doesn't clash with other people. So that's that. Sometimes I tell artists, man, just don't use anybody. Just try to create your own, you know, so we don't get into that drama.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. I love
A
playing
lot of
this
people don't
game.
know that.
I know the answer to this question
Okay.
will be different if I asked you in 5 minutes, 10 minutes tomorrow, or 3 days' time. But if you had to choose five songs by other artists that you'd play now after this interview, what would those five songs be? And by whom?
Five songs from okay.
From any artist, any
Okay.
genre, any decade, those five go-to tracks. You just put play,
Okay.
and those will be the five that will go through.
Okay. Well, let's see. New Order, Blue Monday. There's a track that I did called Funkatron that was did really well for me, and I still play, and it's been around for over 10 years. So that one I would play. This is good. I like this question. Makes me think. Let's see. George Michael. Amazing. I don't know if a lot of people have heard that song, but there's a remix by Full Intention, and it's so good. And I love George Michael. I mean, it's too bad he passed away, because that's an artist I did not get to remix. The Killers, Spaceman, love that tune.
One more.
Pet Shop Boys, anything from Pet Shop Boys. I'm a huge fan from Pet Shop Boys. Western Girls, that would be really cool. That'll be a lot of fun. Maybe I'll get it and they'll listen to this.
That was their first single, hey, We're singles. Yes, that was their first hit.
Yeah,
That's right.
great
That's
tune.
right. Robbie, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. In fact, the main listening audience is the UK, the USA, Australia, and then South Africa. So, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, I would like to, everybody who's listening, who knows me, obviously, or not, I would like to say thank you for keeping me in the business for such a long time. I've been blessed to do what I wanted to do when I was a little boy, which is to make music and DJ and be able to make a living out of it. It has been very, very awesome. It has been great. There has been very horrible moments as well. But it's something that I love to do. 49 already, I'm still doing it. So thank you so much to for everybody who's kept my career going. I appreciate it.